From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Juneau's largest grocery store is closed, state offices and schools are closed, and some trash service has been suspended. Forecasters are warning of potential flooding after heavy snow gave way to rain early this morning. Juneau's Fred Meyer closed early on Sunday evening and remains closed today. However, Deputy City Manager Robert Barr says the company is working on a risk assessment, and the closure was primarily due to an inability to keep up with snow removal. Forecasters with the local office of the National Weather Service are warning of rain and ice forming on top of the snow, which could cause flooding. Forecasters are calling for rain and snow through Wednesday. With continued cold temperatures in the area, they're also warning of the possibility of freezing rain in Juneau. Barr says the city continued its snow removal operations and concentrated on the valley on Monday. He says they're focusing on clearing storm drains. The state's Department of Transportation opened Thane Road after closing it for the weekend due to avalanche danger. A spokesperson warned that motorists should obey warning signs and should not park or stop in the avalanche zone. Other closures in town include Alaska Waste. In a recorded message, the company reports it suspended its trash collection because of extremely icy, unsafe road conditions. The company will be running Monday's trash and recycle routes on Saturday. Many state offices in Juneau have also closed due to the weather. State employees who are required to protect the health and safety of Alaskans, like employees within the Department of Public Safety, Corrections, and the Pioneer Home, are required to stay at work, according to a notice from the state. According to FlightAware.com, Alaska Airlines has canceled two flights that were headed out of Juneau on Monday. Another eight have been delayed. Juneau schools will be closed to students and staff again on Tuesday due to hazardous roads and sidewalks. Juneau School District officials also report that a pipe burst at Riverbend Elementary School causing significant flooding. The district says that school will stay closed on Wednesday as well for cleanup. Juneau campus of University of Alaska Southeast will also be closed on Tuesday. Another top-level Bartlett Regional Hospital employee has resigned. Chief Financial Officer Kevin Benson's last day is January 28th, according to an email from Bartlett's Human Resources Director, Dallas Hargrave. Hargrave, who is also a member of the hospital's senior leadership team, said they're working to get an interim CFO in place. Benson has been at Bartlett since late 2018. He's the fourth member of Bartlett's leadership to leave in less than a year. Former CEO Chuck Bill retired in February 2021. He was replaced by Rose Lawhorn. 6 months later, she was fired for having a relationship with a subordinate employee. The same day that Lawhorn resigned, Chief Behavioral Health Officer Bradley Grigg also quit, though hospital and city officials didn't publicly acknowledge it at the time. Neither Grigg nor the city gave a reason for his sudden departure. KTOO has requested access to Grigg's expense reports. The city has refused to turn them over, saying that they're part of an active criminal investigation. Bartlett is Juneau's only hospital and is the largest in Southeast Alaska. Case counts continue to rise in Juneau. City officials report 214 new COVID-19 cases among residents and visitors to Juneau from last Friday through Sunday. One person with an active COVID-19 infection is being treated at Bartlett Regional Hospital. The hospital staffing is limited, with 22 healthcare workers ill or quarantining. Options for testing in Juneau may be limited. Deputy City Manager Robert Barr says the city's free drive-through testing center is booked up through most of Tuesday. He says demand is up, and weather has also limited staffing. Barr still encourages people who are sick or have been in close contact with someone with COVID-19 to call the city's COVID hotline, 907-586-6000, for a test. He says Capstone Clinic recently opened a mobile testing site in the parking lot of Alaska Industrial Hardware that may have more capacity. Barr says Juneau's Omicron wave of COVID-19 does not appear to have peaked yet, but based on other communities' experience with the particularly contagious variant, he says he's hopeful it will in the next week or two. Juneau's community risk level remains at modified high. Masks must be worn in indoor public spaces and outdoors when crowded. Statewide, officials report 3,284 residents and visitors tested positive for COVID-19 from Friday through Sunday. 79 people who are positive for COVID-19 were hospitalized as of Sunday, including 8 people on ventilators. Free vaccines are locally available. For more information and resources, go to juneau.org/COVID-19. Omicron is now the dominant COVID variant in Alaska, and it is changing the way the health department looks at the pandemic. As KTOO's Claire Strimple reports, the state has new recommendations about how to gauge your risk.
The state's public health officials say that the level of granular data we had at the beginning of the pandemic is pretty unusual. Now, they'll be tracking COVID-19 more like they've always tracked the flu. looking at trends over time.
Things are changing rapidly here in the state of Alaska.
As the state's case counts reach an all-time high, Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink says the metrics public health is using to understand the virus's spread and severity have changed. For example, the percent positivity rate, that's the percent of all the tests for COVID-19 that come back positive, used to be a good way to get a sense of the virus's hold in the community. The higher the number, the more testing needed to be done. But that's no longer the case.
It really is kind of changing in its usefulness. If we have a lot of people doing at-home tests, we always struggle with some of these smaller facilities in getting reports in.
Zink says it's better to look at the total number of positive cases, which is still an indicator of risk and community spread. But state epidemiologist Louisa Castrodale says now we need to look at those numbers in broad strokes instead of worrying about daily counts.
Whether we give you a number that is like, you know, 1435 versus 1537, like it's up. That's good. That's what we want people to take away from it. Knowing that we have community spread, that's sort of enough to help educate people into what they might want to do for mitigation.
Public health officials say contact tracing isn't so useful anymore either, and they're phasing it out. The state hasn't hammered out the full details, but they say they will be getting rid of some of their contact tracing staff. Here's Castrodale again.
Way back when, it was super important to know exactly where that person had traveled and exactly where that person had been because there were so few cases and there really wasn't community transmission.
In other words, contact tracing was useful in interrupting the spread of the disease. Now, Southeast Regional Public Health Nurse Manager Sarah Hargrave says Omicron is moving too fast to catch every case before it spreads.
So when we have a huge number of cases, we really want to focus on those that are the newest because they would have had less chance to spread it around to other people. The ones that are already 10 days out, like they've spread it everywhere or as far as they're going to at any rate.
Hargrave says public health is triaging contact tracing. Instead of trying to reach everyone who's positive, the state will first contact the newer positive cases and people who are at high risk or live in group settings like homeless shelters, mines, and assisted living facilities. As the state changes how it tracks the pandemic in Alaska, local community leaders are having to change how they track it, too. Hargrave says they should be looking at case counts and vaccination rates as they make public health decisions. State epidemiologist Joe McLaughlin says for people trying to make decisions about their personal level of risk, the most accurate metrics are the number of local hospitalizations and deaths. Case counts are still useful, even though they aren't as accurate as they were before, because the state isn't getting data about all of the positive test results now. In Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple.
Bills to bring back political campaign contribution limits and change how Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation board members are appointed were among the legislation filed ahead of the legislative session. Anchorage Republican Senator Roger Holland proposed a bill that would prevent legislators from receiving per diem payments if they fail to pass a budget by the 121st day of the regular session.
There's incredible motivation, or there could be incredible motivation, for people not to finish the budget on time to collect per diem.
Different bills would raise legal limits on campaign contributions to individual candidates. That previous limit of $500 was struck down by a judge for being too restrictive. Another bill would create a new committee that would appoint the public members of the Permanent Fund Board. The governor currently appoints all of the board members, but the bill would give legislative leaders a say. The bill would also expand the number of public members from 4 to 6 and increase the length of their terms. Other bills include measures to protect the fund that pays for university scholarships and grants, as well as for medical education, increase the pay of state workers, and change the permanent fund dividend formula. Few pre-filed bills have become laws in recent years. The session is scheduled to begin on January 18th. The longest-serving magistrate in Alaska is no longer on the bench after writing letters to the editor critical of the Republican Party. Former Seward magistrate George Peck has written 4 letters to the editor of the Anchorage Daily News, the latest in December, which claimed the Republican Party is, quote, actively trying to steer the U.S. into an authoritarian kleptocracy. The Anchorage Daily News reports other letters have been critical of former President Donald Trump and Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy. After a court human resources investigation, the 81-year-old Peck received a letter last Wednesday saying he was in violation of Alaska's Code of Judicial Conduct. He was told he would be fired on Friday. He instead resigned. Ty Onick became the first ever beluga calf to be successfully nursed back to health when the Alaska Sea Life Center rescued him in 2017. The baby beluga was just 6 months old when he was found stranded on a mud flat in Trading Bay on the other side of Cook Inlet. The scientific success story came just a few years after the Sea Life Center took in another stranded beluga calf from the beluga population in Bristol Bay, But that calf, named Knack-Knack, died from infections. Carrie Gertz is the director of animal health at the Sea Life Center. She says those belugas give biologists invaluable insight into the species. She and her team published a paper on the two whale tails and their findings late last year.
As we're caring for animals, we wind up getting a lot of information about them specifically, but also about the population they come from and even, you know, the species.
Opportunities to study beluga whale calves up close aren't so common. That's what made Knack-Knack and Tionic so interesting for her team. Gertz says researchers gathered important data on the beluga populations from their studies, from hearing tests to disease screenings. Knack-Knack, the Bristol Bay beluga, was found stranded after a storm in 2012. He was born prematurely. Gertz says he had a weak immune system as a result, which is partly why he died.
In retrospect, there are things that we could have tried with Knack-Knack. We could have been more aggressive with various therapies.
But she says the experience was informative. Cut to Tionic several years later.
We were able to learn not only how to provide care, but potentially giving us the comfort to go ahead and pursue more aggressive treatment. And I think that really helped in the end.
Unlike Knack-Knack, Tionic had experience with his mother, which Gertz says was important to how he adapted. After a month, Gertz and her team weaned Tionic off his medications and moved him to a pool outdoors. But they determined he couldn't live on his own in the wild. In 2018, Tionic was moved to SeaWorld in San Antonio, Texas. Gertz says it was a bit of an adjustment from all the time around human caretakers, but eventually it clicked.
When he started exhibiting play behaviors with other belugas, it was just a really magical moment, to be honest.
Tionic still lives there today. Gertz says rehabilitating cetaceans in general is difficult. Even though Knack-Knack didn't survive, his story and Tionic's show promise that while caring for beluga calves in captivity does require an extreme amount of care and dedication, it can be done. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, January 10th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.